Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Week 4 Take the Points podcast. I am Tom Zalesnok. I am here with co-host and life partner Dan Partridge. Dan,
hello.
Dan, we had a beautiful, one-on-one moment last week, and then, as usual, the romance has faded. We've had to bring in new partners this week.
Well, that's how most relationships go.
So we're here with Ryan Spillett, who anyone who listens to this podcast knows is our pretty much every week guest, almost every week guest at this point.
Hey, guys.
And we have a fourth guest, Mr. George Vallali. Welcome, George.
How's it going, guys? Glad to be here.
All right. We're going to try to do a podcast with four people where it doesn't sound like an ESPN show where we're all screaming at the same time. Skype does not help with this functionality, but we'll see how it goes. Let's start by recapping week three. There were so many games. I think Louisville crushing Florida State is probably the one that most people think of immediately. And then Alabama with the strange, but I guess impressive win over Ole Miss. Dan, how about you? What stood out from week three, those games or anything else?
Those two in particular. I also really enjoyed watching the Cal-Texas game. That was probably the most fun game of the weekend to watch, I thought. That was a lot of fun. A lot of points being scored. I read an article saying how both in college and in NFL, there's being more points scored, and because of that, the games are closer. So underdogs seem to be covering more, and overs seem to be coming in. Which is weird when you think about it. It used to always be kind of the other way around, be favorites in an over. So something to keep an eye on. Look for underdogs and overs, like, for instance, Cal last weekend.
Yeah, I unfortunately go to bed by midnight Eastern time, so I could only watch about 5 minutes of that game. I think that one ended at like 4 a.m., like many of these West Coast games.
Yeah, 11:50 p.m. Pacific end.
So spill it. What stood out besides what Dan has mentioned? Anything for you in week three?
The ones that you mentioned. I think the Louisville was so impressive. But the thing that stood out the most to me is my favorite topic on Take the Points podcast. Bob Poops laying another egg in another big game, just like the shitbag he is. So that was good to watch. Even though I hate Ohio State, it was good to see Bob Stoops just being Bob Stoops.
I thought Ohio State looked impressive. I would rank, if I had to pick a top four, I would go Alabama, Ohio State, Louisville, and then I'd have to give it to Houston at four, although there's a lot of competition with Stanford, Michigan, etc. George, you're getting thrown in the deep end. Tell us about week three. What'd you watch? What stood out?
Well, you know, I watched my, like, surrogate home team now, the Tennessee Vols, almost shit the bed against Ohio. Very scary there. We'll get into that later. We'll talk about the Tennessee-Florida game later. But definitely watched the Ole Miss-Alabama game, too. And, I mean, as much as you want to say that Alabama should have blown them out or Alabama should have, you know, been on top of that game the entire time, the resiliency that they had to come back, scoring 40-something. It was the run they had was 40-something to 6, I want to say. That's unreal.
45
that's video
to 6.
Game. That's video game-like stuff, you know. And like Dan was saying, just the points this year are just incredible. Just, you know, being able to score 46 points, most of them coming in the second half, unreal. That game at the beginning of the game, first, second quarter, there was no way you thought the over was going to come into that at all. You know, you were going to be like, are you kidding me? The over's going to come in, you know, and covered it easily. But anyways, that was two of the main games I took a look at this weekend.
Did anybody else see the part of the game? This is something I had never really seen before in the Ole Miss game. Ole Miss punched it in the end zone 3 times, I think, in 4 plays, and all 3 were overturned. I found that very astounding, especially since at least one and maybe two of them definitely look like touchdowns to me. And it's weird because, of course, you can't predict the outcome of a game because everything changes after that. But they lost by five. They were denied 4 points there, and then they had to go for two at the end. Technically, if they had been given that touchdown, then you have a tie game at the end. I know it doesn't really work that way, but it was one of the strangest things I've ever seen. Three times in the end zone and overturned, overturned, overturned.
It's backbreaking to your psyche. You know, you get you spend so much energy, especially the celebration part. You know, jumping around, and then you got to go do it again, and you got to go do it again, and you know, it's like how they used to do it in the NFL, and they've changed the rule where teams always would, if there's a penalty on a kickoff, they just make them re-kick. Just the more tired they are, the more likely that is that they might break a big return. So, you know, I'll definitely see it that way.
Sure, I agree. And I did think Bama was the slightly better team in that game, so I think the best team won. But it was interesting. Definitely some questionable refereeing. The other game, well, I want to go right into the lines. A lot of time we spend some time on this recap. I want to go straight to the lines because we're going to talk about all these other teams. The only one team we won't really talk about today is Houston. They played on Thursday night. They had a pretty impressive win, I thought, against Cincy. Does anybody have anything to say about Houston? Spill it. They're a playoff team for you, so you want to brag?
You know, they look sluggish. They took care of business in the fourth quarter because that's what, you know, the most athletic teams will do is depth will wear you out. And, you know, they're going to do that a lot. So if they're going to have a few blowouts in a row here, don't forget about them. But, you know, chances are they might slide even down to like 7 or 8 in the poll just because they're going to play a bunch of cupcakes for 5 games in a row.
One thing about Houston and Louisville, I'm very impressed by their defenses. Everyone saw Lamar Jackson running all over the place, and we know about Greg Ward and the Tom Herman offense, but both of those teams have a legitimate defense, and I think they're both going to be a threat. Who would have thought Louisville-Houston is one of the like top three games of the year?
Mm-hmm. It's going to be great.
All right, let's get straight into the lines. We'll start on Saturday. There is a Thursday game, which we'll do at the end. Iowa -13 at Rutgers. I have decided I'm coming out strong with my opinions. I got a lot of hot takes today. This is the first one. Iowa lost to North Dakota State, who is a very good team for people who don't know. I think some people, even though they've won 5 championships in a row, it is the FCS. And I think a lot of people just see North Dakota State and they think like, what the fuck? Iowa lost to some like junior college. Iowa's going to bounce back in a big way this week, and they're playing Rutgers, who is very, very terrible. I look for Iowa to cover the 13.
They're the new App State, right? I mean, if you look at them that way, kind of, right?
They're better than App State ever was, I think.
Oh, yeah, it's true.
But yes, I get your point. Like, losing to them is not – it's like losing to a mid-level or lower-level Power 5 team. It's not embarrassing.
Although I'm trying to rationalize that because the Vols went into overtime with that, but you know, that's
that could be a little bit of homerism there, but we'll let it slide.
Yeah.
Anybody have a pick for Iowa, or should we move along?
Rutgers is the worst team ever. Bet against them until further notice.
By the way, I want to bring back the concept. This is something we talked about all last year. The Doris Burke game of the week. We haven't mentioned it this year. Iowa at Rutgers is the ultimate Doris Burke game of all time. For our new listeners, the Doris Burke game of the week is a game that it can't just be terrible. I mean, it can't be Indiana and Purdue. It has to be good enough to get on ESPNU. So it has to be TV worthy, but it's on ESPNU, 11:45 a.m. kickoff, Doris Burke announcing. So it's like the... Go ahead.
Yeah, that most likely is a Big Ten alternate channel game. That's not gonna, yeah, that wouldn't even make the actual regular channels. You're gonna have to go online, probably.
You have to go onto the Big Ten To Go app and
exactly.
Download that one. But yeah, the Doris Burke, if I mention that in the future, that is basically like the lowest acceptable level of game that can actually get on TV. So I think we have it here. Nevada at Purdue. Dan, usually I do the Big Ten, but this one's straight to you. 5.5 point line.
I'm not going to take credit for this. If you go on Covers Forum, there's a bunch of good posters. One guy in particular wrote a really good write-up. I won't list his name on here, but some factors to keep in mind. Nevada's got to play a noon start in Purdue. That's a local 9 or 10 a.m. start for those kids. They got to leave Reno and fly to the middle of Indiana to play a Big Ten team. Three, Purdue, their season's on the line as well as their coach's job. So a lot of motivation on their side. Nevada really has no motivation. You know, those kids really care more about conference play. This is just, you know, hopping on a plane to go play a bunch of large white boys in the Midwest. Moral of the story is Purdue has all the motivation and a lot of little weird factors. So take Purdue.
This one was -3 and has jumped to -5.5. So by the time you listen to this, it may be too late, but that's a hot take stolen from somebody else online who you can give credit to if you'd like. That's up to you.
No, I don't.
All right. I don't know the rules of like online gamblers and whether they want to remain anonymous or what.
Always. Never, ever mention anybody. Just be like, I read something. Move on.
It's a lot like the Illuminati. It never happened.
There is no Illuminati.
That's the correct answer, Dan.
Exactly. All right. Wake Forest at Indiana. Indiana -7.5. And you're probably asking yourself, Tom, why the hell is this game even on your slate? Well, Indiana is not good, and I think Wake Forest is undervalued in this game and this year so far. I think Wake is not horrible, and I think they're going to cover the 7.5. But I see some heads shaking there, so if any of you want to jump in and deny that. No? I'm getting around from the three video screens, I'm seeing a strong, we don't care, stay away from this game vibe. The good news is you can't watch it because this falls below the Doris Burke threshold. So, so unless somebody has a Google Hangout going at the game, like, it's going to be hard.
I'm going to Periscope it. Yeah. I'm going to Periscope it live. You can follow me.
You better get a strong Wi-Fi because this game with their bad offense could take forever. You might not have the battery life on your iPhone.
Good point.
Nebraska -7.5 at Northwestern. Northwestern is never great or hasn't been great in a long time, but they're very bad this year, worse than normal. They are 1-2. Their losses are to Western Michigan and a tough 9-7 loss against the Illinois State Redbirds, which nobody will know except people from Syracuse, because I believe the Cuse drew them in the NCAA tournament like sometime in the 90s when we were in high school. Cuse versus Illinois State. I remember watching that from the Career Center with Donna Burns.
Shout out.
That's right. Northwestern did beat Duke, but this is not the Duke team of yore from last 2 years. So Nebraska comes off a big win against Oregon. You would think let down, but their next three games are Illinois, Indiana, Purdue. So literally no chance of looking ahead. Like, those are practically not even teams. So I like it. I would lay the 7.5.
I agree. Also keep in mind last year, Northwestern beat Nebraska. Huge revenge spot.
All right, let's get to a big game, and I want everyone's take on this one. Wisconsin at Michigan State. Michigan State -6. Over under an NFL low, 42.5. That's not even NFL low. That's like Steelers-Ravens low.
Yeah, it is.
And then you've got Corey Clement and a couple other guys questionable for Wisconsin. Can't say if they're out or in for sure. We're taping on Wednesday night as usual, so that's one you'll have to check before you actually place a bet on this. But Wisconsin kept it close last week with Georgia State, and Michigan State looked pretty impressive. So I think a lot of people will lean Michigan State, but I'm not so certain. I think these teams are pretty evenly matched. Let's go with George. What do you think?
I mean, you know, looking at the over-under, like you said, I mean, it's a 42.5, I think, right now.
42.5.
Like you said, in NFL, that's unbelievably low. But again, then again, we're talking about these two teams, but I mean, you really can't, I can't go in good conscience and even recommend an under at 42.5 there. It might as well be 12. So, I think the play there, I think these teams are going to be close, but I think that the over is probably going to be the pick for me.
Spill it.
I think honestly for me, I think the 6 feels a bit too high, but I've actually watched 2 of these 3 Wisconsin games and they're no good. Like their offense is just not good. Like Joel Stave looks like friggin' Joe Montana compared to what they're rolling out there this year. So honestly, Michigan State is a bit of a letdown possibility, but I'd still go Michigan State.
Joel Stave looks like Joe Montana now at like age 49. That's that's about as good as I can give you. Dan, I know you don't care about the Big Ten or these teams.
Correct.
But so I'll ask you a different question.
Okay, good.
Are we to the point in college football where it's like you can't even bet an under? I know that unders will come in some games, but it's so unfun and teams score so much and it's so boring and it's just painful to bet an under and watch a college football game. Should we just give up? And when we think it's under, it's just a stay away.
Yeah. I think we've actually reached that point. Like it's not fun. You know, I mean, we're not doing this for a living. We're not betting, 25,000 on just 2 or 3 games and trying to win 2 out of 3. We're having fun with this. If I'm going to sit here on an off day from work and watch college football, I'm not going to be like, oh, hold them to 3. You know, screw that. Bet overs, have fun. Stay away from the unders unless it's like, bad weather, certain situations. I like to make one correction. The only time to bet an under is in the SEC. I'm just going to say just SEC, not even Big Ten. No UConn, no Syracuse.
I can add UConn to that list.
That's what you think. We'll
get to
just
that.
SEC. Only SEC because they can still have like a 9-3 classic where you're like, that was the best game I ever saw. And that's not the case with any other conference.
Dan, are you biased because you're rocking your Go Tigers LSU shirt?
Yep, pretty much.
All right, SEC game then. Georgia at Ole Miss. Ole Miss is a 7-point favorite, probably the best 1-2 team in the country. Georgia's just not looking sharp these days. They have a new freshman quarterback. Kirby Smart has seemed to continue the Mark Richt school of winning, but not looking good at all. So who's got a pick for this game?
Well, I do not like Georgia.
Yeah.
Ryan, why is that?
They're like you said, they're quarterback. I just don't think he's there yet. I was watching the game. Was it 2 weeks ago where they had to hold on and win? It was a really bad game. Who was it that Georgia was played 2 weeks ago?
Nichols State.
Yes, I was watching that, and until the final drive where they kept getting first downs and iced the clock. Before that final drive start, Nick Chubb had 12 carries. 12. It's completely unacceptable. You're playing an awful team. They're keeping it close. Give your top All-American running back at least 25 carries at that point. The fact that he had 12 was just ridiculous, and I don't trust Richt because I don't trust Kirby Smart because of that.
One thing you got to look at here in this situation is Ole Miss is coming off that game with Alabama, and I mean that was such an emotional high low roller coaster for them the entire game. They're coming off that game, and completely emotionally wrecked. You have to think about that. Coming back to bounce back in another SEC game, big SEC game is as much as you want to look at it. Georgia, Ole Miss, these are two great SEC schools. Okay, so. But at the same time, though, it's just emotionally, we're looking at, Ole Miss just completely probably demoralized after last week. They thought they probably had it in the bag. They thought they beat number one Alabama, and they got played at the end of that game. But then again, you got Chad Kelly, though. You can't really, as Spillett always says, he's the next Super Bowl winning quarterback of the Buffalo Bills.
Yep.
Love to see that happen.
Right, Kelly, 2017.
But as Spillett was saying too, same thing. If they give Nick Chubb the ball, they play the clock the right way, running the game with probably the best running back we have in college football today. Bulldogs getting 7. I kind of like it.
that's just life in the SEC. You have to play these tough teams over and over, and it just doesn't get any easier. That's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is that Ole Miss has lost two real tough games to two, you know, the number one and number two ranked team at the time. And this is their season. You know, if they go 1-3, they really need this big win. So I guess we will see what they're made of. You know, it could go either way. I'll be staying away. Dan, do you have anything to add?
No, not really. This is a really, really hard game to pick. I would definitely stay away from this game. There's a lot of weird angles that all kind of overlap. No thanks.
All right, well then, in that case, Dan, I'm going to throw it to you for one of your favorite games of the year, the Florida State -6 at South Florida. Do you want to explain your Florida football theorem as we do each year?
Sure, yeah. You know, you got Florida State and Miami and University of Florida. That's what people think of when they think of the, you know, the powerhouse schools from the state of Florida. But there's so many other small ones, you know, the South Floridas, and there's a ton of them. I don't want to go through them. But anyway, those guys all know each other. They all played high school ball together. They all played middle school travel team. And when those teams play teams from, you know, North Carolina and Georgia and other spots around, you know, then it's an average game. But these guys know each other, and it's crazy. These games are usually closer than they should be. Underdogs, I'm certain, cover more than favorites in all Florida matchups. I would actually really like to like find out the numbers on that, you know, from like 1990 on or something. All interstate matchups, you know, favorites versus underdogs. Moral of the story is, take underdogs in interstate Florida matchups. Look at the Miami-Florida State games throughout the years. All kinds of weird stuff. Florida-Florida State games, bizarre stuff. It's an interesting angle to always look at. So same thing here. I don't think Florida State's that good anymore. I'll take South Florida in the 6.5.
I have to say, Florida State, we talked about the Shang Tsung theory last week on the podcast, based on the famous Mortal Kombat character whose finishing move was to take your soul. I feel like the Louisville-Florida State game was a Shang Tsung game in that Lamar Jackson took the soul of this year's Florida State team. Keep in mind, I picked them to win the national championship. I think they're totally out of the playoff now, and I think they're just done. I wouldn't be surprised if they lose like 3 games. Their soul was taken and crushed in that game, and I don't think they'll be the same until probably next year. South Florida scores a lot of points. I don't know the exact number, but I think they average close to 50 a game. And granted, one of those games was against Syracuse, so the sample size is skewed. But I'd be very wary of this. It seems like an easy bet, Florida State -6, but be careful. Be very careful. Anything else to add, George or Spillett?
Well, you heard last week, I mean, you hear a lot of people even saying that Florida State flat out quit at the end of that game against Louisville, that they just flat out quit. And, you know, being that they, you know, this is a team that everyone had in their top four probably at the beginning of the year. Everyone saw them in the playoff. People probably saw them in the national title game even. But at this point now, you know, if you get, you know, it's week what, week 3, week 4, you're quitting on at the end of a game, you almost have to think that they have it in their head that, we're on to next year. We're on to next year, and hopefully we'll get to the playoff next year. But, you know, we'll have to see.
Yeah, it's amazing to say that in week 4, but I totally agree with you. And I was, you know, one of those fools who picked them to win it all, not just to make the playoff. But the nice thing about this podcast is we have no loyalty to anyone or any team. So when a team gets blown out, fuck them. Yeah, straight cash, homie. That's all I care about. So,
all business. Just business. It's just business.
I like that. Take the points 2016. It's just business.
I love it. Hashtag every time.
Hashtag. That's going to be our tagline when we run our ad in the Syracuse New Times paper.
Yeah, we are.
I might get shirts made.
Right next to Casual Encounters?
Right next to it. I saw you at Marshall's on South Salina, and we caught eyes. Like, oh fuck, you don't want any part of that.
Our eyes met across the bar at Lookers 2.
Lookers 2.
Oh no.
Well,
That's a little Syracuse inside joke. You can all Google it. I'm pretty sure Lookers 2 is not on Google.
Syracuse, the progressive city that put porn on cable access before it was like a thing.
That's true. What was the name of that show? It was like
Without Shame.
Yes. George, because you brought this up, you get the honor of explaining to the listeners who aren't familiar, what exactly was Life Without Shame?
At some point, there was a genius ploy by basically, and correct me, guys, if I'm wrong in any way here, strip club owners to promote their strip clubs. They decided to go on cable access, and I believe they were using a First Amendment argument that they could have free speech, and it was public access television, so they could use their free speech rights to put whatever they want on TV. Essentially, what you had was porn. What would you say?
Porn is such a crass way of describing it. It was a beautiful program
on regular TV, and we were what, 11, 12, 13 years old?
Yeah, but I mean, it wasn't just like standard porn. This was like dingy Syracuse strip clubs.
Well, right, exactly. I'm probably over-glamorizing it, but I think Spillett's got a take on this.
Spillett's got to chime in.
Yeah, I got something to add here.
Spillett wants to talk about the Lookers lunch buffet.
Well, we'll get to that another time. What I need to add is that all of you guys left Syracuse for college. So you were unable to watch that show in our college years when people from our high school started popping up on the show.
Oh, God. Without naming names, I want to jump in here. No names, but I need to hear more about this.
Why not? Say
there
names.
There were two people that
George,
were
George, you're a lawyer. What is the legal ramifications of naming somebody from our high school?
I would be careful. I would be careful. Just
here's what I'm going to say. Here's what I'm going to say. They graduated with us same year. I believe both of them had children.
That's not narrowing it down nearly enough.
I know. One of them is from Orchard Village, and one of them was from Camillus Village. That's really as far as I'll go. But just imagine being in college.
What were they doing on this show?
Stripping. They worked at the strip club. They were both, after high school, they both went to work at the strip club. I just happened to be drunk in my dorm room with some friends at 1-2 in the morning, and then it popped up and I recognized them, and unfortunately the technology of the times did not allow for, you know, screenshots or DVR. Otherwise I would have saved that forever, but that's my contribution to Life Without Shame. Was yes, two people from our graduating class were on that show.
You would have had to like take it out your old disposable camera, taken a picture of it, brought it to CVS, get it printed out.
Oh, can't bring it to the chain places. They'll take nudity photos
You're right.
away.
You're right. You'd have you to go see the shack.
Like the Italian guy in Solve. You had to go to the Italian guy in Solve. He made doubles, but at least you got him back.
And by the way, the person working at CVS was probably the boyfriend of the girls in that show.
I mean, it goes without saying, those guys must keep copies of all those pictures, right? They have to.
All of them. All of them.
Yes.
But.
All right, coming up, week 8, Take the Points podcast guest. We're going to get the hosts of Life Without Shame. It's going to be all Syracuse. What's Syracuse's biggest game of the year? We'll do a Syracuse-themed podcast. We'll get someone to talk about Dinosaur Barbecue, Brooklyn Pickle. We'll get Debo and his Syracuse Improv Collective on, and we'll get the hosts of Life Without Shame.
All the hot spots.
Yes. And Scorch.
Scorch Gerbil. And Rain Man. Gerbil.
Hold on. First, we got to shoot for Scorch. If he's unavailable, then Gerbil's the backup plan.
All right. We've got to move along because nobody knows what we're talking about anymore. Louisville plays Marshall. I don't think there's an official line out. I've seen 25. I've seen it not quite on the board yet. I think there's some injury issues in this game. People love Louisville now. They saw that ass whooping with Florida State. I would warn people, this is a sandwich game. UL coming off the huge win. Also looking ahead to Clemson, which is next week or 2 weeks from now. Marshall has a big-time offense and can score a lot of points. They can't stop anyone, but they can sure score. If everyone's healthy, this would be a fun one to bet the over. But stay away from that line. I know it's tempting. This is one of the things we do here on the Take the Points podcast. We don't just make picks. We warn you of potential pitfalls, and this is one of them.
That game is good just for watching Lamar just destroy people and go on his Heisman campaign.
Are you guys believers in Louisville as a true contender?
Yes, absolutely. They have to be at this point. Their offense looks like they can outscore anyone in the country. Obviously, I'd really like to see them play Alabama. That's always the traditional, you know, litmus test, so to speak. But, yeah, I mean, they're absolutely a power, and I think they'd be a favorite right now to make the playoffs if that was offered. I think it'd be pretty close to even money either way.
So there's no playoff odds right now that I could find, at least, but what you can bet is conference champions. And Louisville is actually tied with Clemson. I think it's plus 150 each team. So I think that Clemson game will show us whether Florida State really laid an egg or whether Louisville's as good as it seemed. I mean, if they can win against Clemson, even if it's a very close game, I think they're a serious, serious threat. And you're right. I want to see them play at least LSU or Auburn, you know, some SEC powerhouse team. Not either of those are powerhouse this year, but you know what I mean. A tough physical team from the SEC. All right. The Take the Points favorites. Oh, George, you're new to the podcast. We have some what we call the hometown teams, even though none of them are really our hometown anymore.
Gotcha.
We have a clash of the Titans this week. Syracuse at UConn, right down the street from you guys.
Oh,
I could
man.
Go to this game, or I could do literally anything else.
Yeah.
Are we talking basketball or football? What are we talking about right now?
I think it's both. It's a football game, but they have to make the basketball teams play like an intermission game before so people will show up.
Gotcha.
Great idea.
UConn football, there's a game too. That's always my slogan.
Are the Lady Husks playing?
The Lady Husks are not playing. Okay, so what I wanted to say about this game, over under 57, UConn favored by 4.5. There is a 0% chance that UConn wins a game and it goes over 57. UConn, when they win 13-10. Now, if they lose to Syracuse and their defense is poor, then the game could go over. But UConn will not cover that spread and hit the over. No chance.
I kind of like that. It's either going to be Syracuse in the over or UConn in the under. I think that's safe. So if you want to wager this game, then you might as well hook it.
Pretty much. That's how I feel. Dan, you're an alum, and
yeah.
You briefly stopped in Syracuse for 18 years after growing up in Pittsburgh for 2 years.
It was more skinny Atlas, but yeah, kind of.
So I'm going to require a pick from all of you, but from you first.
UConn in the under.
George?
I got to say Syracuse in the over. I think that's a more fun play. We just talked about taking unders and how boring and lame that is. Let's have some fun with it at least.
Spill it.
I think Syracuse is a legitimate touchdown better than Connecticut. I'm not sure the 4.5. I think it should be 2.5 to 3 max. 4.5 is way too much. I actually really like Syracuse and will be actually probably making a play on that.
Dan just can't find it in his heart to go against the Husks with Otto the Orange in town.
UConn's clutch.
That's the problem.
UConn's clutch in weird spots, and I'll make a phone call.
Bring
and
back
they
Jimmy
will
Calhoun.
Know show up. Yes, he'll be there.
Where's
Kevin
he
Ollie. He's
see,
there.
One thing
see.
You'll
Where's
notice about these picks, the two guys with no UConn affiliation whatsoever are all in for Syracuse. Now, Dan grew up in Syracuse, allegedly. It's not been proven, but he may have some ties. He's an alumni of UConn. He picks UConn. I grew up in Syracuse, not ashamed to admit it. And I now live in Connecticut, down the street from Rentschler, as we've said, a long way down the street, but nevertheless. And I'm going to also go with the UConn Huskies to win, but not to cover, because they have a defense, and I think they can slow down Syracuse, and I think we're looking at an awesome low-scoring game. One of those weird scores where, like, you have to look it up to figure out how they reached those point totals, like 19-15. That's my pick. Or, like, 22-19, where you're like, how is it even possible to accumulate those two numbers?
Someone scoring a half point?
Yeah, 22.5 to 19.6. Syracuse covers.
That is correct.
All right. Penn State Nittany Lions at the Michigan Wolverines in the Big House. Whew, man. Penn State is going to be missing all three of their starting linebackers as if they weren't in big enough trouble already. They have no linebacking core for this game, and they actually have two very good linebackers who one's now out for the season and the other is like TBD. Kabinda, nobody knows when he'll return, probably in a few weeks. So it's going to be a tough, tough game for Penn State. I think you have to stay away or take Michigan. Possibly you could think about the over of 57, but with those injuries, I would advise people not to pick Penn State. Spill it.
Stay away. I don't like this game anyway. Over, under, spread, I just don't have any feel for it.
George?
I mean, Michigan's scoring. You know what I mean? They're I'm reading here, they're averaging around 53 points a game coming into this game.
Against limited competition.
I understand, but you got a limited defense that's coming in, as you just said. You know, Penn State's got a lot of injuries happening. Wolverines are known to score. I think, obviously, I personally probably would not bet this game, but if you were going to look at it, probably take a look more at the over. It's at 57. So, you got to assume that Michigan's going to score it somewhere between 35-40. No? I don't know. Anyone else have an idea?
Dan, you can jump in, and then I'm going to say something that totally contradicts what I said before.
I think Michigan's overvalued. They have some flaws. Colorado was out playing them really bad until their quarterback got hurt at the end of the second quarter or early third, one of the two. Then, of course, they decided to roll after that. Colorado literally couldn't throw the ball after that. Even though Michigan took the lead, they still ran the ball at one point 13 times in a row in the second half because they do not have a passing quarterback. So Michigan is going to be weird this year. Like, they're going to win their 9, 10, 11, 12 games, whatever. But out of the blue, like, 1 week we're going to wake up late and they're going to be down 14-0 and they're going to get hammered. That's my prediction. It's not going to be this week, obviously, but Michigan probably rolls this week just to boost up their image again before they choke one. It's coming.
All right, so I know what I said before, but I did zero research this week. I've been busy at work. Not that I do a ton of research most weeks, but it just occurred to me, this is Michigan's first big game of the year. It's in Happy Valley, and I'm pretty sure this will be a whiteout. I don't know that for sure, but I'm going to go ahead and assume if Penn State's the Penn State that I know, this will be a whiteout game. So the crowd's going to be amped up, extremely drunk, extremely loud. Penn State, they can score some points. Their defense was good with the three linebackers. They still have a few playmakers. I think they're going to keep it closer than 19. So I'm not going to bet it, but I wouldn't lay it with Michigan. I think Penn State keeps it closer than 19.
It's not a night game, though, is it?
No, it's a 3:30.
Yeah, the whiteout, I think, is much more powerful in a nighttime scheme.
It does lose some of its power during the day. Yeah. But what can you do? All right, let's move along. Dan has dropped off the call. I'm going to skip the next couple of games because I want him on. So let's go to Pitt at UNC. Does anyone have a pick on this? UNC is a 6.5-point favorite. I could care less.
That number's right.
I have to agree. That's a tough one. That seems to be right on for me, too.
Okay, and then Duke at Notre Dame. We've got Notre Dame minus 21. Notre Dame 1-2. They need a bounce-back win. You think they'll come out strong and lay it to Duke, or is this Notre Dame team just not that great? George?
They have no choice. They have no choice but to come out and just lay the wood in this game. They have to. This is a game almost like we were talking about earlier with Purdue. Not that Brian Kelly is losing his job or anything like that, but the idea is that they need to come back. They need to come back strong in this game. They've got a Duke team that is not good this year coming into Notre Dame. You know, I honestly think that this is going to be a big game for Notre Dame. They have to come out strong here.
Spill it. Any thoughts on this one?
Nah, George nailed it. That's exactly right. Notre Dame has to come out big. You know, I think this is you know, the battle of the smart schools, and Notre Dame, I think, handles this no problem.
I agree with you, and I don't think Duke has the firepower this year to keep it close with Notre Dame. However, going forward, I don't think Notre Dame's that good. I think their defense, which is their strength over the last few years, I think is very weak. I know they've had a lot of injuries, so I don't totally blame them, but I'm not big on Notre Dame this year after seeing them. It's not just that they played, you know, a couple good teams and they just happened to lose. Like, I think they were exposed a little bit. So maybe lay it in this game, but after that, be very careful. Okay, we are going to take a break, and we're going to try to get Dan back on the horn because there's three games that he needs to be involved in. So quick break, and we'll be right back. All right, folks, we're back. We got Dan back in the line, all four of us back again, thanks to effing internet, as Dan said. We thought there was some sort of, like, terrorist attack or some shit in Phoenix because Dan dropped off and then Spillet dropped off. It was just me and George. We were going to carry on, you know, keep calm and carry on. I think that's what you're supposed to do in the event of such an emergency.
East Coast versus West Coast.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about internet. That, George. Yeah, we're going to have to. East Coast internet for life. My 404, make sure all your kids don't grow.
I'm just going to go there. There you go, Z.
Y'all got sickle cell?
All right, see, that's just out of context. At least I threw in an internet reference. All right. Dan wants to talk about the two games we just talked about. He's got hot takes. So, Dan, Notre Dame -21. Home against Duke.
Sure. Really like Notre Dame in the spot, and you know I don't really like Notre Dame. They're going to hammer Duke. Duke's not the Cinderella team from a couple years ago anymore. They're back to old Duke status. Well, not as bad, but they're going to get absolutely hammered in this game. Lay the points with Notre Dame. Huge blowout coming.
All right, Dan, and then the other game we talked about, Pitt at UNC -6.5. Now, before you answer, I have one thing I'd like to add.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
Swedish Guns by the radio department, everybody.
Yeah.
All right, I'll leave it on low. You go ahead.
So, yeah, this is the trap of the week for me. I really like Pitt. They obviously played a really hard road game last week at Oklahoma State. They had a lightning delay, only lost by 7. I think Oklahoma State's better than North Carolina. North Carolina has been known to just choke games and finish 6-6 and then send 7 guys to the NFL draft from said 6-6 team. James Conner running great back from cancer. Pitt's a great story. I think this is a close game. It goes down to the wire. Trap of the week, Pitt Panthers.
All right, let's let the music roll for a minute.
There it is.
And there we go, before we get sued. Okay. George is a lawyer, cannot in good faith recommend it. We play that any longer. So we always talk about the artist briefly. So that was the radio department, Swedish Guns. I know all three of you are big fans. I'm so out of the loop these days that I'm sad to say I don't know much about them. I am familiar, but don't know much. So one of you tell me about them and why people should listen.
They're a band from Lund, Sweden, a little college town that George spent a summer there while he was in law school. I was lucky enough to go join him there for about a week. Kind of like indie, actually super indie. They're like the most indie band there is, actually. And electronic, a little bit of synth. As they've moved on a little bit more electronic based. Great songwriting, kind of like a mysterious band. Could be one of the best and biggest bands, but chooses to absolutely be way under the radar. A lot of fun. Just announced a rare North America tour. Unbelievable, and they're playing in Phoenix, LA, Boston. there'll be like 30 people there. Please go see them.
Well said.
You know, when we started the Trap of the Week last year, we probably didn't think ahead to the fact that actual trap music might not be a fad that lasts very long. So I think we're going to open that up to all sorts of music.
I like it.
All right, fellas. At this moment, I'd like to do something a little different. I know this is a podcast, so this will seem strange, but I think we need to take a moment of silence for Texas Tech is not playing this week. They're on a bye. I think in memory of our sportsbook accounts, which have grown heavily based on Texas Tech overs, I think it's only fair that we take a brief moment of silence. So please join me in this prayer. Spill it. Please be respectful. All right, so...
Was that on the knee? Sorry.
Dan took a knee. Ryan's laughing. George was very respectful of the Texas Tech bye week moment of silence. So kudos to him.
Thank you.
Texas Tech has just been... all right.
Real quick. I was listening to some random local radio show, and someone said they were at a 5K this weekend for, like, children's hospital money raising. And before they fired off the gun in the marathon, they did the national anthem, and one of the runners took a knee. And
oh, no.
That would be – all right, that's the most, like, look-at-me moment of all time. Like, you're raising money for, like, kids with cancer or some shit, you know, some horrible stuff, and you're like, hold on a second. This is the perfect platform for this. What an asshole. Unbelievable. Just think about that. Anyway, sorry, I had to tell America about this. That's amazing. Yay, Arizona. Good job. We love it.
The worst, anytime there's a protest, a political movement, you know, the people who start it have good intentions. There's always some, like, dickhead by week two who has to jump in and, like, use it for their own personal gain. That is definitely extreme.
We're there.
Yeah, you got to watch out. For every Pearl Jam, there's a Creed. For every Colin Kaepernick, there's a guy at that race. All right. Oklahoma State at Baylor. Over under 76. Baylor minus 7.5. Dan P., these are two of your favorite teams, so make a pick.
Lock of the week. Lock of the week, which is 3-0, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to keep it going. 4-0. Bet the money line on this. Oklahoma State's going to win this game outright. And I'll tell you the reasons why. One, their offense is actually superior to Baylor's. Baylor's look like absolute shit this year. I don't know if you guys have seen any of it. This is a shell of the old Baylor offense. They have no confidence. Same, you know, lackluster defense. They haven't played anybody yet. Two, Oklahoma State's really good. They have one loss. That Central Michigan team's going to be in a bowl with 9 or 10 wins this year. You'll see that. And that was a trap game for them. Three, what the hell is wrong with that team from Waco? You got all these scandals, and what do they do last week? They play against Rice. Who shows up? Art Briles is in attendance to watch the game. That's not smart. And then this is where it gets really, really stupid. Sean Oakman, who, as you may remember, is like a physical specimen. He didn't pan out, didn't make the NFL. He's kind of just hanging out in the Waco area. After the game, he goes into the locker room. This is a guy who has sexual assault charges against him. And he goes into the Baylor locker room with a no coach. And they ask the coach, was Sean Oakman the most physically fucking intimidating guy you've ever seen in the locker room? And he goes, I don't know who Sean Oakman is. You're a liar, too.
That's the best part of the whole thing. The best part of the whole thing is, like, I didn't know who he was.
That is the biggest bullshit lie I've ever heard. They're asking players, they're like, was he in the locker room? And they're like, we don't want to comment about who's who. Like, what? What does that mean? That doesn't even make sense. He was there. Art Briles was there. This is all bullshit. They're not good. They're still fucking around. They're losing this Saturday outright.
I have nothing more to add to that. Anybody else? George?
I mean, just the circus aspect of all of that. I mean, it's just an absolute freaking circus. That's what it is. I mean, and at that point, when you have these all, like, these extracurriculars going on with, you know, everything going on around the program right now, I mean, you got to think it's affecting the program. It's affecting coaching. It's affecting the players. It's affecting everybody that's involved. It's in their head, whether it's subconscious or not. It's in their head. So, you know, this team is damaged. They're damaged.
You're right, and we should have done this at the beginning of the year, but I'd like to take another moment of silence for the Baylor football program.
Hang
Rest
on.
In peace, 2011 to 2016. We got everyone's taking a knee now. I wish we had video. I mean, we have video on our call, but not on the podcast.
I'm going to screenshot this.
Three knees.
I got it. I'm going to send it to you guys.
All right. LSU at Auburn. LSU minus 3.5. Don't like Auburn this year, but I also don't feel like LSU should be favored by 3.5 over anyone right now. Dan, you got a LSU shirt on, so you get first draw on this one.
Thank you very much. Why is Vince McMahon not involved in this match? They should put a cage over the stadium and make this a Les Miles versus Malzahn cage match for your job game. Because the loser is getting fired. You have my word on that. And it's going to be Malzahn because LSU is the... It's an I quit match. It's a casket match. It's a cage match. It's a Hell in a Cell match.
Put the microphone
what else
up
we got?
His mouth.
Come on, guys.
Make him say I quit.
There was a tap out match. You had a tap out, I believe.
There's the loser leaves town match.
There's that match. That's what this is in this game. And look for LSU to make just enough plays. They're throwing the ball downfield 3 times a game, which is 3 more times than they have in the last 5 years. Fournette's still the best player on the field, and Auburn's 3 quarterbacks are all a mess. So, LSU.
So Fournette delivers the metaphorical chair to the head of Gus Malzahn.
That is correct.
Maybe the literal chair to somebody.
Anyone else have a take on this game? I've got nothing to add. Spillett doesn't care. George doesn't care. All right, moving along. Arkansas at Texas A&M. A&M minus 6. I'm taking the points. Arkansas and Texas A&M are, I think, 2 of the better teams in the SEC, the entire SEC right now. When you look at Alabama clearly being, you know, the class of the SEC, and then you say, you know, who's in second place right now? Who's in that next tier? I think these are 2 of the teams that are in that tier, along with Florida and Tennessee, despite their struggles. I guess Georgia's still undefeated. Probably not LSU right at the moment. I mean, I think that's probably it. So,
I mean,
take
this
the
game,
points.
We're going to find out who the other, you know, in the SEC West is after this, right? I mean, that's the, besides Bama.
This is the challenger to Bama right here. This is the next person up in Game of Thrones to try to come at the king.
Yep. Mm. This is the Baratheons coming back.
Yes. This is Robert Stark. And it will end the same way for Robert Stark as it does for one of these teams.
Someone's going to have the Red Wedding.
So speaking of Red Wedding, I'll have our listeners and all of you know that my wife was watching the Alabama game and found out their nickname was the Crimson Tide, and now she calls them the Period Team. So enjoy that.
Fair enough.
Wow. That's intense.
Yes.
Okay.
Came out of left field. Take the points. Anyone else disagree?
No.
I really like A&M in this game a lot. Like a lot. I know it's close. I know it's that Arkansas is going to slow it down and try to grind the game out a little bit and change and control the tempo. I just don't think they can, to be completely honest with you guys. I think I feel really strongly, you know, top probably 5 or 6 game of the week for me. I think I like A&M a lot.
All right. Well, what we're going to do now is do the 3 out West games. I'm going to let Dan and Spillett as our West Coast consultants handle these. And then George is going to talk Florida, Tennessee as our game of the week, which I've chosen as the game of the week specifically for George and not based on merit of the game.
No, because it's not.
But out West. So we've got Stanford minus 3 at UCLA, USC at Utah minus 3. Utah the favorite in that game. That's on a Friday night. And Cal at Arizona State. Arizona State favored by 4, over under 84 points. Take it away, gentlemen.
All right. First of all, USC and Utah. I actually like the under in this game. We talked about this. However, I'm not betting it. I'll stay away from that. The UCLA Stanford game is really interesting. UCLA season's pretty much on the line. You would think that they would respond, but I think this might be a quirky year for Rosen. It's the transition year between being a freshman and a junior coming out. So I think it's okay that they lose and they win 7-8 games this year. So don't be scared off. Stay with Stanford. And the Arizona State-Cal game is really interesting. I don't think Arizona State's running back's going to score 8 touchdowns or whatever again, but there should be a lot of points. If you want to have some fun, go ahead and bet the over. But compared to the other really good overs we've liked in the first couple weeks, this is probably a little bit harder. But you can never talk me into betting the under. I'll tell you that much. Cal has scored, I believe, over 40 points every single game, and they're averaging giving up 31. Arizona State's very similar. It's going to be a high-scoring game, and it's just going to come down to some turnovers in the red zone and field goals. So that's why they call it gambling. You can pretty much flip a coin on that one.
You definitely don't have the value for that over as we've had in a couple games last week. But
yeah,
are you going to take the under? I mean, it's your funeral.
No, you can't do it.
Spill it. What do you think?
Totally agree with the over-under conversation. I think it's really close, but take the over. Have some fun with it. Utah, Friday night. Really like Utah in this spot. We've talked about this for probably 3 seasons now, or at least I keep bringing it up for 3 seasons now, how hard it is to play at Utah. It is a really, really tough place to play. I had the opportunity to spend a week up there this past March, and it's a really, really tough place to be. So I like them a lot in that spot. 3 points seems pretty easy. And then my second favorite game of the week is Stanford. My second favorite play is going to be Stanford. I really like them in the spot. I think what Dan said is exactly right. Rosen knows he can have a bit of a mediocre year. He was a star as a freshman. He's going to come out next year as a junior, so he'll have a big year then. This is kind of his year where he can, just be a dude and just kind of hang out and play.
Yep.
So I like those games a lot.
Just score a couple touchdowns, take a dip in the hot tub, just relax.
Simple.
Going back to that Utah game, it's a blackout.
Utah is a tough place to play. I mean, people don't realize, but Utah, their stadium is out in the middle of nowhere, far away from these other Pac-12 teams.
Elevated, really high. You don't realize it till you get there. It's not quite Denver, but it's definitely, you can tell the altitude definitely, has an effect.
3/4 mile high just doesn't have the same ring to it.
Fair enough.
All right. Our guest of honor this week, George Villali. We specifically asked you this week because of your fan allegiances to the Tennessee Volunteers. They host the Florida Gators, their arch nemesis. They are favored by 6.5, which is, telling. I mean, that's the most they've been favored by over Florida in quite a while. So why don't you start probably since the Phil Fulmer era, at least since 2001 when they won the championship. Why don't you start by telling people, how you became a Tennessee fan, and most importantly, what is it like when you attend a game at Rocky Top? What's the atmosphere?
First of all, Rocky Top, like going to Neyland Stadium is one of the coolest, sporting ventures to do, to me at least, that I've ever done in my life. People don't really understand. We all grew up in the Northeast. We're Northeast guys. We grew up in Central New York. We never really understood what college football was. We had the Carrier Dome in Syracuse. The Carrier Dome is a joke in comparison to these, stadiums that exist in the SEC, in the ACC even, in the South in general. Let's put it that way. What's hilarious is you go down to the South, you go, first of all, I became a Tennessee Vols fan through one of my best friends in college that she grew up in Tennessee. Her sister went to University of Tennessee. And then, it kind of just went from there. I needed to pick a college football team for crying out loud because as kids, we had Syracuse for crying out loud that they were good. You had the years of, McNabb years. Before that, you had the McPherson years.
Shout out to Marvin Graves.
Marvin Graves, Marvin Harrison. He might have killed. Never mind.
Don't worry
anyways.
About that.
moving on. We had teams that were perennial top 25 teams, perennial top 10 teams, even some of those years that we were, growing up. But then, it just seemed to be that whole program just tanked. It just unbelievably tanked.
If I can offer for people who aren't familiar with Syracuse a little microcosm of the program. When they were playing Louisville, was it Louisville a couple weeks ago in the dome? It was 82 degrees in the dome. This is in the Carrier Dome. For those of you who don't know, the Carrier is an air conditioning company, and their dome was 82 degrees. So if an air conditioning company, Carrier, can't even air condition their own dome, you can't expect much from the team that plays within that dome. Now I'll hand it back to you as we juxtapose that with Neyland Stadium.
So anyways, I had the opportunity to go to Knoxville one year, and actually the first game I actually went in to Knoxville was in 2006. It was actually the Florida UT game. Chris Leak was the starting quarterback, actually, for Florida at the time, and there was a little-known freshman named Tim Tebow, who to us in that game was number 15 is in, it's going to be a quarterback draw. So it's like it was out of control. Like every time he came in the game, it was – clearly going to be a quarterback draw, and every freaking time it was a first down, made people insane, made people question Phil Fulmer's sanity at the time, which then later basically got him shit-canned. But anyways, that was a 21-20 game. That was an amazing game. Balls were up until, I want to say, like the beginning of the fourth quarter. Florida pulled a drive out of their ass, I want to say, halfway through the fourth quarter. Chris Leak ended up pulling that one out. But anyways, this is a game that you had to almost look at from – like a roulette table style. You look at the board, there's 11 reds in a row. That's what we got right now. We got 11 Florida reds in a row here. Black's got to come out. That's going to be Tennessee.
All it's right, time Wesley for black Snipes. To come out.
always bet on
black. All joking set aside, I mean, Tennessee this year, I think, is suffering from being severely overrated. I hate to say it, but they're trying to play to a level where they're just not there right now. I mean, they were a top 10 team at the beginning of the season, almost losing to App State, playing a terrible game against Ohio. I mean, they pulled off a game, at Bristol, against Virginia Tech, but that was a weird game, weird field, weird stadium. There were so many weird factors going on there that if that was actually, at Virginia Tech or at Neyland, that might have actually been a different outcome. Who knows?
And so what is the issue with their team this year, in your opinion? Is it simply we had them overrated, or are they underperforming?
Honestly, I think they're overrated. I think they were overrated. I mean, people were all on the bandwagon with Josh Dobbs at the beginning of the season, that he's one of the best quarterbacks, in the top echelon of the best quarterbacks in the nation. Something's wrong with him this year. It almost seems like something's wrong with him. Watching that that App State game, I was just kept saying over and over again, something is wrong with Josh Dobbs. Like, he is just not there. It was almost scary to see the regression that happened from last year to the first couple games this year. This is a team that if they're going to be a top 10 team, if they're going to be an SEC top level team, you can't be playing tight with Ohio. You can't be almost losing to App State, not in the SEC, not in the era that we're in right now. But anyways, getting back to the whole
this game and this rivalry specifically, this is the big one for them.
This is the big one. This is like Red Sox Yankees. This is it's to that level. I mean, there's hatred there. I mean, if you're wearing anything with Florida on it and at the tailgate in outside of Neyland, you're in for some trouble. That's what I can tell you that right now. But anyways, that being said, this is a great rivalry. I honestly would love to see the Vols pull this out, but Florida's defense right now is just incredibly, incredibly strong. They look incredibly strong. I mean, just the idea that they held North Texas to 53 yards. Yeah, North Texas, fine. I get it. North Texas is one of the worst teams in college football. Okay. But they held them to 53 yards. that's like video game level type defense there. I mean, that's like almost cheat code level.
That's like if you were playing a JV, like eighth grade team, that's the
honestly,
stats you would expect.
I mean, an FCS team, you know, a Division III team could probably get more than 53 yards, I would hope.
Ironically, West Jenny, led by quarterback Mr. George Vallely and star receiver Mr. Ryan Spillett, could have put up 54 yards at least.
Those are very, very loose designations there.
Star is a relative term. Our football team never won a game when we were in high school. Never won a home game.
Never won a home game.
I believe you guys were 4-4 our senior year, but you couldn't win one in front of the home crowd. You won all the road games.
This is true. This is true. We lost to it. Lost on a Hail Mary against Auburn. It was bad
when
news.
You look back at West Virginia football, George. Like,
yes.
How do you think about that now?
In what way?
Do
That's
you
a loaded
think
question.
About it? Do you think like I wish we were better? Do you think I had a fun time and I don't care what the record was? Are you proud of your achievements?
There aren't many achievements to be proud of in that situation, unfortunately.
Do you think it taught you valuable life lessons? I always hear stuff
absolutely.
High school football taught me to be a better man as an adult.
All joking set aside, any sports, you guys all played sports at some point and at some level.
But we're all insanely immature still at 35 years old, so it didn't work for us. It doesn't take.
Yeah, but, you know, playing pitch, you learn discipline.
That was a that is a big time sport now.
When to play a hand and when not to play a hand.
That's
but
right.
Anyways.
All right, so we're going way over time. Again. Tell me your takes for this game. What's going to happen? How will it play out? And most importantly, who's going to win?
I think it's going to be an actual close game. It's going to be a real close game. I know the Lions at 6 and it's for the Vols right now, but that scares me, to be honest with you. I see, you know, obviously these two teams are going to keep it close. The Vols got a bunch of injuries right now on defense. I know Jalen Reeves-Maben was supposed to play on, you know, this weekend, but it's a little scary right now whether or not he's going to play. He's obviously, you know, a big part. Cam Sutton broke his ankle last week. He was, you know, people always refer to him as kind of the moral, you know, leader, the heart of the defense there. I want to say Corte Sapp is done with an ACL injury as well. So, you know, there's a lot of injuries on that defense right now. But, you know, again, it's not Florida's offense that we're concerned about. I would say it's more Florida's defense. Florida's coming in, obviously, with a backup quarterback at this point. I want to say Del Rio is out. Am I correct about that?
Yes.
Del Rio is out. So, you know, we'll have to see how that pans out. But, you know, let's see, you know, the reality is that this is going to be a close game. You know, it's usually within a field goal. I wouldn't take the Vols minus the points at all. If anything, I would take Florida plus 6. I think that's the play here, as much as my heart hurts me to say that.
Not a true fan.
Just business. Just business.
Just business. Just
take
business.
The points. 2016, it's just business.
I still think the Vols get out, though. It's going to be they're going to check her out the stadium. They don't do blackouts or whiteout. They check her out, and the Vols are wearing their gray uniforms. They look pretty sweet.
Everyone has stolen all of this from Penn State. I just hope you know.
It's true.
The original whiteout game Penn State played against Michigan. Nobody will ever beat that. It was one of the greatest games. Penn State was sorely overmatched and managed to win that just based on the fans, basically. Fan excitement.
This is all Sandusky's idea.
Sandusky was not around for that part. He might have been like in the whiteout somewhere.
He was exactly
under cover of whiteness.
In his tighty whiteies.
Yeah.
Pretty sure the whiteout actually started in Canada. I believe Penn State stole it from the Edmonton. Was it Edmonton or Winnipeg?
Here's the thing.
I believe that's where it started.
Are we going old school Warren Moon here? The Oilers?
No. I'm talking hockey.
Oh, no,
NHL.
The Edmonton Eskimos. Yeah, so that's what they are.
No,
right?
No, I was talking NHL. I think that's what Penn State got it from.
Oh, okay.
I think it's the first whiteout, I'm pretty sure, was an NHL game out in Western Canada.
Gotcha.
That doesn't count. Fake country, fake sport. Dan, you have a pick for this game?
I like the under. I don't see how Tennessee scores that much. I don't see how Florida scores at all. prediction 16-10 Tennessee.
So we only have a few minutes left, and I want to talk about Noel Gallagher. But there is a Thursday night game, Clemson minus 10 at Georgia Tech. I'm going to pass on this game, but if anybody has a pick, jump in right now.
I have no pick for the game, but I do have one last pick. My favorite play of the week. It's not on the board for you guys, but I have to say it. Central Michigan outright at Virginia. Virginia is the worst team in the Power Five conferences. Rutgers is the second worst. Absolutely, Central Michigan 3-0. Antonio Brown, you. Andre Drummond's on board in the press box wearing Chippewa's gear. Absolutely hammer Central Michigan. That this is the play of the week. My favorite game.
You sure Virginia doesn't just look bad because they came up against the Berlin Wall of defenses that is the UConn Huskies?
No, they're just really shit.
No, that's the correct answer. All right, fellas. Here we go. Got a little music for this one. We had a few topics we wanted to talk about at the end, but we've gone a little bit long, as we're apt to do when all four of us get together. So we're going to focus only on the most important thing. There is an Oasis documentary coming out. The trailer looks amazing. Noel Gallagher might be the coolest person ever. So basically, where are we all getting together for, and what kind of adult beverages are we drinking beforehand, and what do you expect or want to see from a documentary about Oasis's heyday? Dan P., you're the number one fan. Jump in.
There is a lot. I mean, there's so much I want to see. Well, I mean, the people making it, or the guy that made it, made the Amy Winehouse one, which was really long and pretty intense. So I'm really excited for that. This is going to be not like an 89-minute documentary. I think this might be like an hour 25, or, 2 hours plus. I want to see some of the early stuff. I love the like 1994 through 96 years. I'm sure they're going to focus a ton on that. But I'd really like to see him talk about like some of those off years, some of the like the late 90s Oasis kind of like out of control and just doing way too much coke, and like their sound sounded really bad on the album, like just like really like a wreck. And that's always like the fun part of a rock and roll band. And then they like kind of clean up their act and put out some like semi-normal songs, but it's killing them to do it, and then they break up. So Oasis just like is so funny because they followed the classic like 1960s 70s band track. They're like, this is how this is gonna work. We're gonna start hot, then we're gonna do too many drugs, then we're gonna cool out, and then we're gonna break up. And then that's kind of what they did. So many great lines over the years. Noel is still a genius. Like, people in America don't understand, like, there was a period of at least 8 years plus where if Noel came out in the press and said that he was a fan of a new band's art, music, then they were instantly popular. It had its own term. It was Noel rock. And that's crazy. Like, even in America, we don't have that level of like celebrity. Like, Beyonce goes, oh, I really like blah, 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 this clown. No one really cares, but they pay attention to Noel. He's a working class hero from Manchester and my favorite musician of all time and just the funniest dude ever.
Judging by the trailer, it seems to focus on their like rise and then the drug-addled fall. That seems to be the crux of the movie. For me, the best era to focus on is the Be Here Now era. I mean, that's my favorite album. I do like the ones before it, of course, but my favorite thing, Noel claims, and this is really hard to believe, that he doesn't remember the year that they recorded the Be Here Now album. He's like, I was pretty much blacked out for a year.
It's 100% true. Those guys went to some like remote island to like record it, like in the Bahamas, with like a bunch of like liquor and drugs, and that was it.
And Johnny Depp on slide guitar.
Yeah, Johnny Depp showed up. They're like, we're like, we're Oasis. We're a pop band. We make 3.5 minute songs. Let's do a 4 minute outro on track one. Like, okay, here we go. Rolling the dice. Love it.
They wanted their Sean Ryder moment.
I was going to say, it's like the Happy Mondays.
It's exactly. Exact same shit. Like, yep. 7 years later, you think they learned the lesson. They're like, nah, We'll send them to the same island with the same supplies. And you think it's going to work again?
Different outcome, right?
It's the same shit as Hitler going into Russia. It didn't work for Napoleon. It's not going to work again.
Historical drop right there.
Thank you.
That is good. Dropping some history, some Noel Gallagher. My favorite Noel quote, he is the one person where even today, they haven't released an Oasis album in, what, 10 years? If there's an interview with him, no matter what site, if it says interview with Noel Gallagher, whatever the questions are, I'm reading every word of that thing because you know it's going to be pure gold.
Every time.
I just want to give my favorite Noel quote of all time. This one, I'll paraphrase because I won't get it exactly right, but I love this one. I texted it to you guys earlier. He said, I used to have a problem with drugs, but then I made more money.
Perfect.
Nailed it.
There's so many great Noel quotes. He's an absolute legend. Like the funniest musician I think ever. Maybe Morrissey, but it's a different kind of funny. But yeah, Noel's just hysterical.
I do have one question about the documentary. Because it is being made by other British guys, are they going to remember to put the subtitles when Liam talks? Because otherwise we have a 4-hour documentary with just a bunch of fucking gibberish.
That's a good point. It's gonna be hard to tell.
He's so fried, I can't understand him. They have to put subtitles.
Liam's a total train wreck. I can't wait to see what he looks like in 30 years. Like, you think Keith Richards looks bad? Liam's gonna he's gonna be like a new color human being that doesn't even exist now. Like, he'll get so much work done, he'll be like, oh, you know, he's only like a light turquoise today, but that's because he just got treatment. Like, it's gonna be bad. I cannot wait.
Awesome.
I'm trying to collect myself so I can end this. Anyone have anything else to add about football, Oasis, or otherwise?
We're good. Nice podcast, boys.
My manager, Marcus Russell.
He told me. All right. For any Oasis fans out there, there's a 14-minute interview called Wibbling Rivalry. They put out a CD single, an actual single. It was just an interview, and it actually went to like 17 on the charts in England, which is mind-blowing. But that's just chock full of facts and hits because basically Noel and Liam are being interviewed a few days after they were taking a ferry from England to Amsterdam to play a show. Liam got too fucked up. The whole band got kicked off, so they missed the show. And Liam's saying, hey, it's rock and roll. This is what makes us legends. And Noel's saying, that's just you acting like an immature idiot. It's all about music. And both of them are absolutely drunk as skunks on gin and tonic. Liam's a little coked up. Noel's really coked up. And it's hysterical. There's line after line that are just, it's just classic. Talk about supporting West Ham and being a football hooligan to being on a ferry in Amsterdam. And just, it's unbelievable. Take 15 minutes out of your day and listen to that. Genius.
All right, so this movie comes out on DVD October 31st. We will all watch, I'm sure, and report back and check back in November for one of our podcasts. We'll have a full, probably half-hour conversation on this. But for now, we have to go. I want to thank a special thanks to Mr. George Vallely for being our special guest today. George?
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, George.
Thank you to Ryan, as always. And special thanks to Vegas Outsider, Dan Partridge, dropping the knowledge. iTunes, Stitcher, TakeThePoints.net. See you next week, everyone. Take the point.